Now I saw a light. Numbers are running. Thank you.
Hey, man, we're good. Hey,
all right. Thank you, man. Come on in. We're going to get started with a little funny video. Come on in. We're going to watch a little funny video. Yeah, speechless. Exactly. Okay, we're going to watch a funny video or two as people are coming into the room. This one has quite a bit going on in it, and it's called Staple Gun. And this guy works in a factory, and he works with a big staple gun. Watch what happens with his staple gun. Where's our sound? What happened to our sound? Maybe someone turned it off back there. Oh, I want you to hear the sound, though. No, it's not coming out. Daniel, check it. See if you want it, if you can find it. I want to play it with the sound, though. Chris, you know anything about the sound back there? We had sound on earlier. Let's see. It's plugged in. It's plugged in. We lost it. You know what? I know what happened. I bet we have a mute on somewhere. Got it. Watch this. Why? I played that one for Freddie because he's this big sports guy in here, and they're not paying attention to their job. They're watching the playoffs. Okay, let's try another one here. How about this is new off. Oh boy! Now what happened? What happened to my picture? There. Well.
Do you have all your paper ordered?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Now let's go back to the show you one more here. People coming in. Okay.
World's funniest video.
Did you have your recorder on?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you.
I was just told to ask you that question.
I'm glad you did.
We're going all out.
By the way, for the CD, we are showing some funny videos, and you won't be able to see them because you're not here. So, but you can hear people laugh. We're going to show you one here called, let's get down to the videos, here we go. This is Why Men Don't Do Windows. Some of you have seen this because I've been at your church. Ladies, men don't do windows, here's why. Watch this. Now. Now you see why guys don't like to do windows, right? Oh, yeah. I get these from all over the nation. People send them to me. They're funny. By the way, people ask me, where can you get these type of videos? If you go online, stupidvideos.com, you can see videos like this. And there's some other sites, too. I don't know all the addresses, but you can get some of them there. All right, welcome back. You should have a handout, one PowerPoint handout called Trends. Trends in Single Adult Ministry. We're not doing this one tomorrow, so I'm glad you're here today. I think, Freddie, did I see your workshop, the one you did this morning? Is that tomorrow?
Or no? Actually, I'm doing two tomorrow. I'm going to call five questions every single ministry should ask.
Right.
And it's kind of more of a nuts and bolts kind of thing, no matter what size church you're in. That's kind of applicable to that. The second one is, what's the DNA? Today we look at the DNA of you as a godly singles leader. Tomorrow we look at what's the DNA of a godly singles ministry.
Okay.
What kind of evidence do we have?
And I'm not teaching this one tomorrow, but teaching some others. So, and one of them is repeated. So, take a look at the schedule. Thank you. I do. I have it on.
We have both reporters on.
Because he's going to make.
I have a session in the first two.
Yes.
We're going to double take this one just so that we can make up for what we lost this morning.
Double for your money. Yeah. We were bad boys. We were did not tape the first two, and we're going to get kicked out of here. Kurt is in here. Okay, it's going. This session for the tape, for the CD, we're going to talk about trends and look at trends in single adult ministry. Now, Freddie and I have been in this quite a while. Some others of you have too, but some of you are brand new. You need to know, they understand the importance of trends as we get into this, because it makes a difference. There's four reasons for single adult ministry, in my opinion. Here they are. Demographics demonstrate the need, and I think I have some. Do I have demographics on this?
Yes.
Okay. It's to show you, because we haven't given those yet. People's lives motivate it. People's ministry potential validates it, in my opinion. And Jesus' life authenticates the need for this ministry. You can use these reasons, if you'd like, to acquaint your church and your people. And here they are. Here's the demographics. You know what? Yesterday in USA Today, I was on the plane. I was reading USA Today. And inside, in fact, here's the article. You can pick one up from yesterday. Inside, there was an article on singleness in the nation. Here it is. It's called Free as a Bird and Loving It. Yesterday's USA Today. And this says, more Americans are happy to marry later or not at all. And this quotes 44% of Americans 18 and over, all ages to 100, are unmarried. I know this morning Freddie said 50 to 60%. That is true. In some cities, it is 50 to 60%. But overall in the country, it's a little under 50%. It's between 44 and 50 in the country from what I've read. And this quotes 44. It says also that young adults are delaying marriage. I'm just giving you a few highlights. And have a longer life expectancy. So more Americans will spend more of their adult lives single or single again. Then it also says, it's not a bad trend that we are removing the stigma from being single and talking about alternative ways to lead a single life. She says, the households in which nobody is married in the country right now, according to 2006 census, was 47.3% of the households were unmarried households. Now, that doesn't mean 47% of the people are single, because some of them are. This is households, but 50. I'm sorry. In 2005, it was 50.2%. So it fluctuates a little bit in 2005, and I have that figure up here. Great article. Take a look at it. You're free to read it here, but leave it. Don't take it. You can pick it up in the USA Today, but I'll leave it here if you want to. Oh, you know, yeah, I'll leave it here if you want to see it. Why do most churches have a lower percentage of single adults? Well, we're not being relevant all the time. We're going to look at some trends about that. And here's, I won't read all these, but here are the facts. These are from 2000. So this is not 2005. These are 6, 7 years old now. You can go online. You can add up the numbers. This is what I've done. 2000 census. There they are. 82 million 7 years ago. Now the Census Bureau says 97 million. Age 18 and older. There's a growth of single-person households. When Ron was born in 1900...
And 39.
Sorry. Only 5% of the households were single. Now it's 26%. Only one person living there. See? Widowed, divorced, single person, widowed, living there. But of all households, 50% are single people living together, living alone, single parents, widowed, divorced. 50% of the households have single people in them. Only 26% have one person living there, once you see the difference. Here we go. This is from 2005. Married households made up 49%. This was released last September 1 in the national news. I do this for a living. I love demographics if they relate. I keep track of them. Some of you know me. I love stats if they relate to this. Unmarried households were 50.2% from the 2005 census. Now, the 2006 said it's a little lower, so it fluctuates. And you can see I got that from Yahoo News, October 06. Here's the median age of first marriage. We're postponing marriage. This says what the article says right there. We're postponing marriage. We're marrying later. Census Bureau. 36% of the family types are single parent families now. And for some of you African American people, you need to know, and all you white people need to know, 60% of the African American households, of the ones that have children, are single parents. 60%. 6 out of 10. Do we have a need for single adult ministry? Oh, do we ever have a need? Okay, here's some more. Second reason for this ministry, people's lives motivated. And I'm a big believer in this. That's why I say that we need to be teaching on sexuality and self-esteem and managing your emotions and managing your money and divorce recovery and single parenting. All these life needs. I think I have a list of them here. There they are. Life issue needs. It's on your handout. I think we need to be teaching on these. People like you and me and Freddie and Kurt. Because if we don't teach on these things, Freddie, Kurt, Bob, Sue, all of you, they're going to get their information from the world. Aren't they? And that's not healthy biblical perspective. We better, if the church doesn't teach on these, and 90% of churches don't. They don't know how to teach on these things. Where is it? Right here. I'm sorry, I'm a promoter. We've got some resources. We did a whole six-session series on sexuality and singleness. Six sessions on video with printable PowerPoints like you have in your hands. We better be teaching on this stuff. We've got 10 of these out there to sell. Six different sessions with discussion questions. We better be teaching on that. Otherwise, they're going to get their information from the world. And the world just is not going to be healthy, biblical stuff. Okay? People's ministry potential validates it. Consider the impact of hundreds of thousands of single adults radical for Christ. Man, we could change the world. Young adults, single adults, we could change the world if we would reach more of them. And Jesus' life authenticates us. So those are four reasons. All right. Now, look at the trends of families. I'm going to show you these different families in the nation now. Nuclear families, you know, guess what percentage that is of all the families in the nation? Guess what percentage is first husband, first wife? Some of you know. Anybody want to guess? First husband, first wife with their kids?
20%.
It's 27 and 20. It's 24%. 24% of the families in the nation are nuclear families. Guess what the other 76% are that the church many times forgets? It's these types. Single parent family, step parent family, single adult family living together, a couple of single adults, same or opposite sex. No, I don't have it on this one because I'm not. But the 24%, I can get you the stat on that, the source. Blended families, grandparents raising their children's children. Lots of those now, over a million of those. Expanded families where you take a child in from the court. These are the families that the churches better be going after, not just the nuclear families. Look at the trends in family structures here. Separated families. Lots of those. And there's two more at least. The homosexual partner-parent families who are living together. And then there's another one. Homosexual, heterosexual. Really, Dennis? Yes. People who are living together because they're emotionally bonded, but they're getting their sexual satisfaction outside of the marriage. There's those families too. Would they be accepted in your church? Would they be ministered to. I'm not saying, I don't condone their lifestyle. I don't agree with it. Neither would Jesus. But would you love them and accept them like Jesus would? A lot of our churches wouldn't. Okay, these are the families that we better be reaching. These are the family trends that are happening in society. Now, it's important to understand trends. Because times change. Single adult and young adult, young adult ministry, is evolving. Ministry is much more complex than when I got into it 27 years ago. Single adult ministry. Much more complex. A lot of different things. And we're going to raise some of those. And Freddie's going to have some comments too. Single adult ministry is still new in many areas. Look how many of you here. Let me see again. You're in your first year of single adult ministry. Or you're considering single adult ministry. Let me see. You're considering it or you're in your first year. Look at that. A fourth of you. See? It's new in most areas of the, many areas of the country still. After 35 years. And trends help you determine put potential needs. Trends help you determine your directions that you're going to go. So it's important to understand trends. They may vary by the area of the country, by the cultural differences, or the degree of the development of the ministry in that part of the country, or your understanding of ministry. They vary a little bit. Your perspective. You know, mine's a little different than Ron's and Kurt's and Fred's and yours. But together, we're learning together, and we better look at some trends. I'm going to show you trends in three areas. I've already shown you family. I should have put that as an area, family trends. Here's three more areas of trends we should talk about. Personal trends, attitudes and perspectives and lifestyles of single adults. Leadership trends, that's attitudes and perspectives towards single adults by married people and church people and pastors. And then ministry trends, attitudes and perspectives and programs to and with single adults. Here's personal trends. Some things I've noticed, and this isn't all of them. I need to update this. There are even more. There's a growing awareness of the aging of single men and women. People are 35, 45, never married. My good friend Linda Hardin is the director. She's my counterpart in the Nazarene denomination. Linda Hardin, Kansas City, is where their headquarters is. She's a full-time single adult and women's ministry director. She's never married. She's 58. She wants to get married. Why isn't she married yet? She would like to be married, but for some reason it hasn't worked. She hasn't found the right guy. It hasn't been the right time. That, you know, a lot of reasons. But the growing awareness of the aging, that's why we're seeing, even in some mega churches, 55-year-old plus groups. We had one in San Jose, California. We had 50 people on a Tuesday night, and they were 50 to 70 years old. Most of them were 55 to 70. They weren't old enough for the seniors group yet. I don't want to go to the seniors group. Those people are 65 and 75. Well, some of you are too in the group. But, you know, we're very age conscious. Some of the women, 35, 40 years old, they're thinking, maybe I'll never marry, and their biological clock is ticking. That's a trend we're seeing across the country. People are, they're not marrying. Well, the article points it out right there, the USA Today article. And so the awareness of aging of single adults is a big thing we need to discuss and come to terms with. The poverty of single again women. Women who are mostly coming from divorce. The single again, mostly divorced. Because the widowed, more often than the divorced, are more taken care of. The widowed woman. But 60% of single women who have divorced are below the poverty level line. You know what that is? I'll tell you what it is because I looked it up last year. $19,900. If you are a single woman and you make, and you, especially if you're a parent and you make less than $19,900, the government considers you below the poverty level. Wow. I have some friends below the poverty level. Do you? After divorce, the male income usually increases and the female decreases. That's a trend. It's been around for a long time. Here's another one. The growing continuing bias in fundamental circles towards unmarried adults. The bias. In Christian circles, not secular circles. Christian circles. In secular circles, we accept single adults in society better than the church does. don't we? I mean, look, you know how many dating sites we have? Dating, at least 830 dating company matchmaking sites. About 80 or 90 of those are Christian, but most of them are secular. Look at the size of soup cans. Look at the portions for one, the restaurants who serve one. We cater to single adults in the U.S. in the secular realm, but we don't in the church. We don't. Thank God for you who are willing to cater to single adults. In the Assemblies of God, only 20% of any of our churches have anything specific for single adults. We have 12,300 churches. That's only about a third of what the Southern Baptists have. You have 42,000 churches in the U.S. if you're Southern Baptist. We have 12,300 and only 20% of them have anything targeting single adults. There's a bias, there's a fundamental problem here in fundamental churches. Churches are still desiring the married staff. That's the norm. I get some calls from pastors once in a while. I've told some of you this. Dennis, I'm looking for a singles pastor or a young adult pastor, either one. And I give them a couple names. Oh, could you tell me which ones of those names, which ones of those are married and which ones are single? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, Bob's married and Bill's married, but Gary's single. Oh, well, tell me about Bob and Bill. Well, why, Pastor? Well, we'd like to have a married couple. You know, the wife can see things that the husband can't, and they're just more accepted, and kind of, we'd like to have a married couple. I say, well, Pastor, that's interesting, because the Apostle Paul says, and I quoted it to you earlier, that it's better to be single for ministry reasons than to be married. It's better to be single. Well, he does. Well, he does. He doesn't know what to say. And 1 Corinthians says, like I told you, that it's better to be single for ministry reasons. Now, I understand that, yes, my wife sees things I don't see. You bet she does. And there's a benefit in some ways. But Paul says for flexibility, chapter 7, he says, I want you to be free from anxieties. Verse 32, 1 Corinthians 7. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord, and how to please the Lord. And the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests and time are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about things of the Lord, how to be holy, embodying spirit, but the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. Paul says that if a single man or woman has more flexibility with their resources than the married person, but yet the pastors want me to give them married names. It bothers me sometimes. And I love it when I go to churches and there's a single man or woman on our staff, or two or three. I love it. And they're called pastor. Youth pastor, singles pastor, Christian ed pastor. They're single. I love it. That's biblical in my opinion, isn't it? It's biblical. Help your pastors to see that. The assumption that marriage is always best. In the evangelical church, I think we got it backwards. It's not always best. We have parents. Oh, one of my soapboxes. I'm sorry, but we have parents. I want my kids to marry. And you're 26 years old. You haven't married. You know, you're not getting any younger. I want some grandkids someday. You know? And in the church, we kind of push them into marriage. And we're happy when our kids get married. Oh, praise God. Johnny found Susie. Sometimes Johnny and Susie shouldn't be together because it's premature. And they're not ready for the roles and responsibilities of marriage. Some of you pastors who married people, you know what I'm talking about. We marry people in our churches sometimes that aren't ready for marriage, but they feel they God led them together and it's time to get married. Oh man. And then they come to your office for marriage counseling a year later because they're struggling. And they were married prematurely. That's one of my big pet peeves in singles ministry, to have young adults and middle-aged adults, 40, 50-year-old people, marrying for the first or second or third time prematurely. Oh, it bothers me. They're not ready for marriage many times. They're in love and their hormones, I'll be honest, their hormones are over acting up. They're overactive. I can't get into that. It's too much. All right. But I'm sorry. I better go on. Continued growth in cohabitation. This is a trend in the company, in the country. This is a big trend. half, I did a whole 25-page seminary paper 3 years ago. I'm finishing a degree in seminary in Springfield, Missouri. The whole paper is on our website. You can print it and download it on cohabitation. It's called No Marriage, No Ring, No Problem. It's on our website under Single Living and under Leaders. You can print it. This is just some highlights from the paper, 25-page paper. Half of 35 to 40-year-olds have cohabitated in our country now. Half of them. It's not just the 22-year-olds that are living together. 1960 to 2000, 1,150% increase in cohabitation in our country. People living together of the opposite sex in a romantic relationship, not a platonic relationship, romantic. The Census Bureau had a question about that on the census in 2000. 11 million people now, 5.5 million couples are living together. It's even worse in Canada, percentage-wise, it's worse in Canada. Look at this, I won't read them all. 75% of children born to cohabiting parents will see their parents split up before they reach age 16. Is that healthy? Oh, God, no! Cohabitation is huge in our country. Let me ask you, you tell me, do you need marriage in our society anymore for the three big reasons people used to marry? Lifelong companionship, children, and sex. Do you need marriage for those three reasons in our society? No. We just live together. And they're doing it by the scores. Even some Christians are.
Yes.
And we've got to hold up a standard. And I don't condemn them, but I love them, but I want to help them see the error of their ways. The divorce rate is much higher. Print the paper. It's on the website. That's a personal...
But you've got to condemn their behavior.
The Lord condemns their behavior, and we don't agree with their behavior. That's right. But we love them as people. It's the same as raising children. You don't condemn the child. You don't hate the child, but you hate the behavior. Right? Here's the reasons they give. Look at these. When you look at these, they make sense. To them, you can see that this is why they... I put all these in the paper, that 25-page paper. This is why they live together. It's not just to prove compatibility. It's a lot of reasons. Some of your friends have lived, they're living together. Some of your friends, I'm sure. Okay, here's some more. I'm not going to read them all, but these are just highlights from the paper. Let's go a little further. Okay, another personal trend. Never married issues are becoming more pronounced. And Freddie, if you want to make a comment about any of these, because he said he might want to make some comments. We're kind of doing this together, but we're going through this outline. So if you have a comment. Never married issues are becoming more pronounced. Women and men are seeing the potential of life without a partner. I have women come up to me almost every church or conference I'm at, and they say they want to ask a question about adopting a child. Dennis, you think it's wrong to... either adopt a child as a single woman, because I'm 38 and I want to have children. I don't see any potential on the horizon here. Or they even say, what about having a child from artificial insemination or some other way? Yeah, they're dealing with these ethical issues. Single. These are the issues you're going to have to deal with as a leader. This is life. Single adults want to know. They want to talk about this. Parental expectations, marriage hopes, parents wanting their grandchildren. This is what we deal with in single adult ministry. There it is. I'm sorry, I forgot I had it up there. In vitro adoption. That's a trend. A few more of these and we'll take some comments. We're going to break these up into three segments here. Oh, man. Personal trends. Step family issues are more pronounced. More pronounced. Oh, huge, huge issue today. You as leaders need to be familiar with these discussion books out there. These are discussion books on dating, on engagement, and on merging your family together. These are three discussions. They're not reading books, they're discussion books. These are to help your single adults who are going to get married someday or even remarried someday. Some of them will marry somebody that has children. Let me just read you the issues from the dating book. I'll just read you the topics. Every page has questions like this, and the couple will rate themselves on these questions. They discuss this stuff. Every page has them. Here are the topics. This is written by a man who has his PhD in remarriage from Oxford, England University in England. And his name is Don Partridge, Dr. Don Partridge. He teaches all over the nation. He's written these books. He's got two more coming out that are actually reading books. He does seminars around the country. Listen to these topics that these books address. Life as a single parent. This is just dating. This is the dating one. This is what they have questions to discuss these. Life as a single parent. Children, friends and associate, prior relationships, prior marriages, family of origin, education, legal issues, employment history, current employment, medical history, addictions, attitudes, personality characteristics, irritating habits, eating and meal time, social viewpoints, political viewpoints, religious viewpoints, pets, sports, dating, communication, separate family histories, geographical differences, discipline. Can you imagine dating someone and talking about all that stuff? And having guided questions to help you? I tell you, they're excellent little books. $10 each $9 if you get all three. You as leaders need to understand those issues, and I encourage you to take a look at them. Second and third marriages are tough, even first sometimes. So this is some more trends here, a couple more. Church rage and frustration. We have a lot of styles out there, don't we? We have a lot of options. We have a lot of churches in a mid-sized city or a large city. They're not loyal to denominations anymore. They're not loyal to your church anymore. They're going to go, some of them go to three home churches. I go here for fellowship, I go here for the preaching, and I go here for the praise and worship because I like their praise and worship. You know what I'm talking about. They're not loyal to your church just because they're Baptist or AG or Presbyterian. That's way down the tubes now. This is what we're dealing with single adults. And church rage, they're intolerant. Why can't you? I'm 60 years old, and how come the music has to be so loud? Or I'm 30 years old, how come the music has to be so many hymns and just a piano and an organ? And they're intolerant, so they may or may not tell you, and they'll leave and go to another church. And they may come to your group, your singles group, or your young adult group, but they'll leave. This is what we're dealing with. Trends. That's a trend today. Continued de-emphasis of denominational labels. There it is. Lack of loyalty to a denomination. Lack of loyalty to a church. Indifference and desire to be part of a non-denominational. Those are the churches that are growing. Most of them are the non-denominational ones. Some of the Baptists and the AG and denominational churches are too, but non-denominational churches are. Women dating younger men. This is a trend today. This is a trend. I read an article about it. There it is. The Kansas City Star from 03, three, 4 years ago already. There's what in their survey, in their study, what they found. More women are dating younger men. That's a trend. All right? Let's take some comments. That's the biggest section, the personal trends.
Question.
Yes.
Why do you suppose people have a problem with denominational identity?
Well, in my opinion, Ron, why do they have a problem with denominational identity for the tape and the CD? Because they think they're boxing themselves in. They don't want to be boxed in and be labeled as agreeing to all their doctrine of a denomination, a Presbyterian denomination, Assemblies of God, Baptist. They don't want to be boxed in. They want a little more freedom, and they want to pick and choose. That's one reason. Why do the rest of you think? Freddie, what do you think? Why?
Well, I think from my perspective, there's a couple of things with that. One is, there's a stigma that comes with almost all our denominations.
Yeah.
Now, I've been in Baptist churches almost all of my ministry life, and there's certain stigmas that come along with that. People see us as being sometimes more black and white, fundamental Baptist, they're fundamental Assembly of God churches, fundamental Presbyterian churches, all that kind of thing. A lot of it has to do with so the stigma, I think, has a lot to do with it. Another point, the younger you are, the highest probability that you had almost no church influence growing up. Meaning that you come from a split home, possibly, maybe a family where you go to church, maybe only one parent went, so you went every other week, and that kind of thing. So So they don't have a connecting point with Baptist or Presbyterian or Assembly of God or any other denomination. Their connecting point, they're looking for anything with God. So they see the more non-denominational type church being, at least in their minds, being the same kind of neutral zone to go into. And maybe in some ideas also a little more contemporary, if you will, or a little more open-minded to, you know, other ideas.
Yeah.
And that. Yep. So I think those are some of the stigmas that come
good
with being in a denomination.
Good comments, yeah. Daniel?
Like I said, I'm dealing with the 18 to 25.
18 to 25 year olds, okay.
And I think that this particular generation, they don't have a problem with commitment. If they would commit to something that is true and valuable. But they don't like, I should say, to be boxed in by label. They want to have freedom of going where they want and do what they want. If they happen to be in a Baptist church, looking for something, but then they want to go to this other church, then to the other church. As long as it's about God, it doesn't matter what happens. I have a hard time getting them in the chapel. Why is that? Because it is associated to a label, to something. They don't have a problem going to the beach and doing the Bible study on the beach.
Well, let me, first of all, I'm going to address part of this tonight. I'm going to talk about doing a call, not about me. It's not about me. And this is where a lot of it, whether you're young or old, or I don't think necessarily it's an age thing, even though it may surface in different pockets at different times. But most of us are selfish people. And in singles ministry, you'll see that come out quicker than any other part of the church because, for one thing, as singles, we can be transient. We don't have anybody holding us accountable.
No.
Unless you're a single parent, you're a kid, or you're calling, hey, Dad, take me to church this Sunday, or hey, you know, if you wake up in the morning and you want to go to the Baptist church because you hear they're going to have a new speaker over there, or there's some new, you know, Todd Adams kind of lead praise and worship or something, you'll go show up to that. And then next Sunday you find out that the Presbyterian church down the road has got some neat speaker or somebody coming to lead praise and worship or, you know, whatever it is, you'll go to that church that Sunday. And so there's a whole idea of that. You can say it's not commitment. And I agree that they would say that's a lack of commitment. And that's why we've got to teach, okay, that the whole Bible in the process, okay? The Bible's not denominational. The God that teaches in that is the church is part of a fellowship. God wants all of us to be part of something, a church family.
Yeah.
And whether it's Baptist or Assembly of God or Presbyterian or Methodist or Lutheran, He wants us to be a part of something and make a connection because you have gifts and talents that need to be used. God wants to use your resources and all those things. You're part of that. And
well, I was just going to say, I mean, just hitting on that, I believe programs are important, but, you know, if we as leaders are just playing to them, if all we're doing is putting on a show, and I'm trying to compete with you, and we're trying to compete with the guy down the street, and all it is to get them through the door, then we're just perpetuating that. We're just perpetuating them showing up for entertainment value. And my entertainment value better be better than yours if I'm going to get them through the door. And there's no retention. We're just being... The world's teaching us how to, you know, iTunes versus Windows Media Player or whatever.
Yeah, and not everybody's, for the CD, not everybody's competitive. Some pastors and leaders are, but some are not. And we have to be careful. We don't want to label them all that way. Okay, let's take another comment. We have a lot to go through, but let's take another one.
Can I get a microphone and take it around?
Yeah, that'd be great. Here. Yes, that'll pick it up on the tape?
Yeah, let's see if it will.
Okay. But it won't pick it up on the tape, though. That's the...
Yes, can you hear me?
That's why we have the microphone. Thank you. Don't be scared of it. All right. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, I like the whole idea of not making a single school church. I understand what it means, but how do we reach those people that are lost and hurting if we can't get them in there?
Right.
It should be more about, you know, making a connection. Because the people that I'm inviting are not necessarily Christian.
Yeah.
I invited somebody just recently, and the daughter of the person that I was talking about the group, I said, well, she has a religious group. And I said, well, it is Bible-based, but it is a place where you can become a fellowship.
Yeah.
So we have to get these people in there, and they have to feel comfortable coming,
yeah.
And they worship them, and the Holy Spirit will be
Tomorrow, on that same vein, I want to teach a class about 7 models of ministry. 1 or 2 of those models are designed to attract unbelievers. And we need to attract unbelievers, I think, and relate. Would you feel comfortable bringing your non-Christian friends into your group the way it is now? Some of you would, some of you wouldn't. They wouldn't stay. Okay, let's move on.
Let me address one thing.
One more.
Personal trends, because
all right,
this is very important, because I think this is a huge problem in most of our ministries. It's this whole thing about sexual activity taking place in our ministries. Okay? This has probably been the most significant change that I've watched over 19 years. Is that 19 years ago when I first got in, there were people who were sexually active, but there was a fear of certain things, either moral conscience, God, whatever it was that was driving that. But that has been less and less over the last 10, 12, 15 years because of our culture's been teaching things like that. And we have to teach. Now, for one thing, I was single until I was 42. I spent the last 14 years single, celibate. You can't come to me and say, you have no case with me to sit down and say, hey, I can't deal with it anymore. I've been married before. I've been sexual. Hey, I don't even know how many people I've been dealing with. Okay, and that's how my life was at one time.
Yeah.
But I know when you commit to things to God and make that a focus, you can do anything because God will give you strength. But we've got to teach, and we have to love people in the process. So when you come to me, I'm not going to come beat you over there in my life. I'm not going to whip it out and start pounding you, 1 Corinthians 7 and all that kind of stuff. What I'm going to do is point you to Scripture. I'm going to say in love. And I'm also going to say to you that you can't do it, but you have to want to. You have to make God the higher priority. And our culture has become so easy, and that's why the cohabitation, the lack of marriage commitment is there.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, we're picking and choosing what we want out of relationships. And the truth is, my wife is not the person that I dreamed of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the truth is, she's more. Mm-hmm. Okay? But when I wrote my 33-item list of what I wanted in a wife, I had a friend that actually asked me to write it down, so I did this. I wrote it down and it came up with 33 things. My wife is probably 15 of those. But because of who she is in Christ and all that, she's more than that list could have ever possibly been. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to take our list, our people in our singles ministry, we're taking that list and they're saying, well, I've got 3 things, and Sandy can give me these 3 things. And then I can go to Cindy, and Cindy can give me these 2. And then I can go over here to Linda, and I can get 2 or 3 from Linda.
Mm.
And we're trying to piece all that together.
Mm.
Any commitment without following any scripture guideline in the process with that.
Boy, if you had, this is a humorous note, and I like what you're saying, if you had 32 items, then one you didn't marry until you were 42.
Right.
Wow. And too many of our single adults have too long of a list. They're expecting a male or female Jesus. And they're not going to find a person that's that perfect. But thank God she's more now than you thought even when you married her. Okay, leadership trends. Let's look at a couple of those. This section is not as long. Credibility issues. I realized this one several years into my ministry, and I still struggle with it. I better be credible. You better be credible. You better know your material. You better have integrity. You better have an example as a Christian, male or female, if you're going to be a leader. That's an awesome responsibility. Because in the world, they get excellence. Not with integrity, but with material, with knowledge. They get excellence. Look at the music industry. Look at the video industry, the food industry. Excellence all around you. I went to a buffet with my wife last Sunday morning. There were 50 items on, at least on that buffet. Huge buffet. Look at the excellence we get in the world. In the church, we better offer them excellence. We better be credible leaders, showing transparency and vulnerability and integrity. Crucial need to cast vision. That's a huge thing in the single adult ministry. To cast vision and help your leaders to see it and to also help you cast that vision. The desire and the responsibility of a leader in the team. Moving from official leadership to gifted leadership is another trend we have seen across the country. By that I'm meaning churches are now not waiting for people to graduate from Bible school or seminary. Because they see someone in their church body that has a passion and they hire them. Because they can train them, but they can't give them passion. Just because you have a sheepskin from a school doesn't mean you're going to have passion. But you can train and give them training at places like this and books and seminars and Not very many schools teach single adult ministry, but you can give them training, but you can't give them passion. So they're hiring from within the church. I see a lot of churches doing that now. And they help them to learn the ministry. The large church is making single adult ministry a priority again. That's off and on. I've seen that off and on. I can't say every large church is. But in my opinion, the peak, the wave of the ministry for this ministry was between 80 and 92 or 3. That was when it was the thing to have a single adult ministry. And there were more single adult ministries. I've been in the national office 7 years, and I have seen churches, big churches and mid-sized churches, their leader has left and they haven't replaced them. They haven't replaced them. Or they've replaced them with a volunteer person, not a paid staff.
State consultants the same way.
Yeah, state consultants. So, this isn't always true. But sometimes it is, because they're realizing the talents and the potential of single adults. The mid and large church is making young adult ministry a priority now. I'm seeing that. In fact, we represent both in our office, and we have as many or more young adult lists, groups, and leaders on our websites than single adults. We have two websites, and if you go under, we have a young adult site and a single adult site. I think the young adult site is out there on the table. But if you go under leaders, you will see the groups listed. We have as many or more young adults listed, young adult ministries, than single adults listed. They're seeing that need, because the church is losing young adults, 18 to 28 years old. We're losing them. We've got to be relevant and help to retain them. Here's the quarter life, what some people call the quarter life issue of young adults. Can you remember when you were this age, 18 to 28, and you were dealing with these issues, what is now termed by some authors as a quarter life crisis, establishing your independence? Hey, some people don't leave their parents till they're 25 or 6. It used to be they'd leave at 18 or 20. Now they're staying home longer to gain financial independence. Yeah, some of you, it's cheaper to live at home. You got some decent food. You got a clean house, etc. Continue to get their education. These are the issues they're dealing with. Singleness issues, housing concerns, marriage concerns, desire to have children. The quarter life crisis. There is such a thing. And we need to help these young adults. That's another ministry there. But we have some of you in here today. Leadership trends. Another one. Development of leadership training is realized. Thank God that 50 or more of you are here. That's exciting. It's exciting that you can learn from our mistakes. I love that. People wanting training. And we need books like this. We need seminars. We need conferences. We need colleges to train. I wrote a course for one of our AG colleges called Global University in Springfield. It's a long-distance learning school, mostly. And I wrote it 3 years ago, and they paid me for it. A single adult ministry training course. To this day, it is not printed. They have not edited it and printed it. They've had it for 2 years now. They have their reasons. Some of them are good reasons. Some of them are not. I'm pulling my hair out. I've lost my hair. Why? I can't go across the country and say, we have a course at Global University. You can take it. And it's cheap. It's inexpensive. It'll help you. It's similar to the book I wrote, only it's in a course form. We don't have any schools in the Assemblies of God. Do you have any in your denomination that teach single adult ministry? None that I know of. I have Presbyterian pastor friends. I've asked them. I have Baptist pastor friends. I have Seventh-day Adventist pastor friends. None of them have a course. But yet we do for youth ministry. We do for children's. We do for Christian education. We do for senior pastor. We do for missions. We have all those majors, but we don't have anything for single adults. And 45% of the adults are single in our country. It's another pet peeve of mine.
Yes.
What a need! Oh, help us, Lord. Okay, the last section is ministry trends. Ministry trends. And we're going to have Kurt come up after this, and we're going to do a little panel in a little while with Kurt and Freddie and I. We're going to take only questions. We're going to finish this now. Stabilizing of specific groups. Age groups. College age groups like Daniel's dealing with, 18 to 26. Young adult groups who are 18 to 30 or even 18 to 35. I know churches who have 25 to 35 year old groups. They're seeing the need to stabilize age groups and need groups. Single parent groups, divorce recovery groups, widowed groups, support groups. We're seeing that. Divorce care held outside the church. That's another trend. I love it. Because like one of you said back here, reaching the unbelievers. In an apartment complex, in the common room, you rent it for $25 a night for 10 weeks and you show a divorce recovery video. They're doing it outside the church because more people will come in because they're scared to come into your church. In your church, you guys swing from the chandeliers. You're Pentecostal, Dennis. You're Assemblies of God. I heard you speak in tongues. Woo, not coming in there. They're scared to come into some of our churches. Let's be honest. Some of them are. So why not go to them and hold some stuff where they'll come in neutral settings? Please come, some of you, hopefully, tomorrow to the Models Workshop. We're going to talk about that. Teaching on spiritual issues, personal issues, both. We talked about that. These are ministry trends. Single adults setting the pace for short-term mission trips. Love it. They don't have to go home and check with their spouse. When your pastor, Misty, preaches a great message and has a trip to Guatemala this fall, you don't have to go home to your husband and say, "Honey, can we spend $1,000 and I want to go to Guatemala?" She didn't have to check with her spouse. She just does it. That's the benefit of being single. See? They're setting the pace. I've done a lot of mission trips with single adults. I love it. They're eager. And young adults especially, they're willing to serve and get involved in causes like that. Okay, establishing large group experiences out of the larger group. I mean small group experiences. Getting together themselves and doing things. Growing understanding of the need for young adult ministry, there it is. The Gen X and the Gen Y, those age groups, has a growing understanding. Challenge of transitioning, this is a huge one. This is a trend I don't have the answer to. How do we transition a 35, 6, 7-year-old young adult male or female who's never married? How do we transition them into the single adult ministry? Because mom and dad doesn't want a 37-year-old man looking at their 19-year-old daughter. Do they? If you were a parent, would you want 37-year-old men looking at your 19-year-old daughter? No. So how do we transition those older men and women, single men and women who have never married, into the singles ministry? That's a tough challenge because they don't want to go into the singles ministry. Number one, their friends are in the young adult ministry. They spent a year there. They've got 25 and 30-year-old friends and 35-year-old friends in that young adult ministry. Number two, the majority of the single adult ministry is 40 to 60. And I'm not even 40 yet. I'm 37. I don't have the answer. That's a huge concern. We need a dialogue. We leaders need to find answers to that. Because we can't allow more and more young adults in their late 30s to stay in that young adult ministry. Because it's going to get older and older, and eventually they chase the 20 and 25-year-olds away. They don't mean to, but the 20-year-old doesn't have as much in common with the 38-year-old. They're in a whole different stage of life. This is a challenging ministry, you guys. It's tough. That's an issue I don't have an answer to. And then it's still new in some areas of the country. Okay, I think that's it. Okay, comments or questions? I'm going to ask Kurt to come up and Freddie. And we're going to... Yes, you can answer some too if you want. Okay, so Kurt's going to run around and give the mic to you for your. Try and make it. We got a half an hour, so make your question to the point if you can, and one of us will try and answer that, and sometimes we'll even throw it back to you. So we're just going to sit up here on this nice padded. Anything you've heard today or that even you haven't heard, you want to talk about?
How do you handle the topic of dating when you're growing a single?
Go ahead.
How do you handle the topic of dating? Well, we don't allow dating in our church, so. But I think it goes back to something that Dennis said just a little earlier. You know, my philosophy, what I believe is this, you confront the issues that are on you. You know that 95% is estimated that most singles and single adult men desire to be married, whether they admit it or not. Okay? And so if that's true, then obviously in a culture where dating is a process that we go through, in other cases do that, we need to teach people how to date, don't we?
Yeah.
Now, I know Dennis has some books. I don't know if Chris has any of these with him or not. There's a book called The Power of Passion. It was just retitled again by Ron Eager. It's a great book. It talks you through the different stages of dating, a healthy dating, whether you are a non-married, never married person, or if you're a person who is re-entering into the single world and you start dating with that. So you've got to be, I think, you can't run from the subject. Okay? You have to teach it as pastors, as leaders. We got to teach them how to talk about it and be open with that. So.
Yeah, there's a great segment in that book about ways to make yourself more attractive. And it doesn't talk about your physical appearance, but if you're interested in attracting a godly mate, you'll demonstrate those attributes of spiritual maturation that will attract that godly person. So it's a great resource.
Let me just add a quick comment, too. This is great. We're getting a lot of comments and more questions. Dating, if you're not careful, the ministry can... I agree, we need to address it. And I used to teach 4 weeks a year on it. However, if you're not careful, it can get the image that this is a dating group and that's the purpose. That's not the first purpose of the group. First purpose, I think, should be to grow spiritually and personally in relationship to each other as friends with the Lord and with friends. But the byproduct of the group is dating. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Allow it to happen. Teach on it. Help them to date correctly to avoid the mistakes they made the first time. But say that it's not the first purpose. It's a byproduct. And then say, I would rather have them date in a Christian group in the church, look for dates, than out there in the world where a lot of them come from because they've made mistakes out there.
We had a question right here from Garland, I believe.
Okay.
I just wonder how the church can change this thing about single people not being in church ministry, like, for example, being a deacon or being a head of the ministry. I just wonder how it can change. Because I believe in my country, I've been here for 25 years. They've never tried a single person to be in the altar. No way. And then I came here, it's the same thing. It seems to see the single people are just pushing back. Mm-hmm. I think that's the reason why a lot of single people, when they come to church, they see all these marriage people in the front. They're taking all the position and they're running the single people away because they don't have anything to do. They don't want to have a permanent position to in the church. They don't want to be up there. They don't want to show that, well, I can do something. I'm spiritually sane to pray for the church. You know, I've been able to see if there's a way, or could you find a way that the church can change this idea? Jesus Christ was single. Mm-hmm. He had the most effective and the best ever.
You start.
Well, a couple quick responses to that. First of all, it goes back to what Dennis was just saying. In our ministries, yes, there are things, there's perceptions about us, meat market, all these kinds of things are going to happen. But we have to teach the basic principles of Scripture, okay? And what you do is you develop as a pastor or leader people who will rise up to be effective leaders, godly men and women. So that what I do is I go to my pastor on staff, and I'll take him a list. Every year I know deacon nominations coming up, or committees, or whatever particular kind of things that they're in the church, or opportunities for leadership. And I will take him a list of men and or women, okay? And I'll say, these are some folks you need to consider this year for this particular kind of thing. You know, some of them are limited, depending on what your interpretations about certain scriptures are. But I force the pastor to have to look at it, first of all. Okay, because if you're waiting for the senior pastor to go, hey man, bring me a list up here, or if you can't find out your singlesmen, it just isn't going to happen. It's not anything slamming against senior pastors, but they got other things they think about, and that's just not their primary thing. So take them along and listen to people up there, but you got to make sure you've got quality people that you can take up there, because as they see the singles, well, you know, that guy's pretty spiritual. I like that Nathan guy. You know, he's pretty spiritual about life. So the next time I bring a list, and they take another name off the list, and they do something with it, and it begins to kind of mushroom throughout the church with that. So I think, you know, we've got to be proactive. We can't just sit here and wait for the church or the pastor to take the initiative. Let's take the initiative. Let's go to them and say, hey, here's the folks that
would be great for this particular committee or, you know, whatever it might be.
Let your voice be heard. That's what he's saying. And he's a married guy, and I'm a married guy, but they need to hear from you single adults. They need to hear. One of the pastors I worked with said, Dennis, it's a crime to be diagnostic without being prescriptive. So be prescriptive. Take them a list. Talk to the pastors. Let them see that you believe this, and that remind them that Jesus and Paul were single, and Jeremiah in the Bible never married, and Ezekiel was widowed, and Hosea was divorced. Did you know that? Remind them of all these big Bible buddies, and remind them that we need single adults, and that half the adults are single in the country, and point out, like you said, some good quality candidates.
Just don't mess the list up the first time. If you need to get an audience, okay?
I have a question here from Brenda.
Just saying what y'all were saying before about, you know, people thinking that the dating, that the singles ministry is all about dating and so forth, and a meat market or whatever. How do you get the older gentlemen in your group not to go after the younger women when they can be a good prospect for the older women? And the same thing with women going after the younger men. How do you stop that? Because that's what really, you know, kind of goes on.
I would treat that issue as a group counseling issue number one. In other words, I would teach on it. Well, maybe not a whole 30 minutes, but maybe a 10-minute FYI. I got to the point where there were so many issues like that. Gossip. We had wolves and wolvettes. We had, and we used to train, guys and gals, both guys and gals, to go rescue a man or a woman over here who was cornered by the opposite sex. I can remember a beautiful woman coming in and guys fighting over sitting next to him. It's ridiculous. One guy would go up to get some tea, and the next guy would take his seat and sit next to this new visitor woman who was a good-looking woman. It was crazy. But so to combat that, we would do once or twice a month a 10-minute FYI for your information. And I would teach on gossip or dating out of your age bracket or things like that. Just a little 10-minute snippet. Now, sometimes it turned into 15, 20, or 30 minutes, the whole lesson. Okay, so be it. But you need, see, if you teach in a group setting where there's 10, 20, 50 people, then you are, everybody's hearing it, and they're going to go talk about it. Oh, yeah, that was good. Did you know what she said? Oh, that was good. I like what he said. See, they'll talk about it. If you just confront one at a time, you don't have the benefit of the group and peer support. So the peer education can be on your side.
And I agree 100% with that. The other side of that is, at some point, if you have a person who doesn't get the hint, take it for 10-minute sessions with them, you got to go to them individually.
Yep.
19 years, I've only had to ask one male to ever leave the ministry. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean I didn't confront others. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think about actually in front of a female about this particular issue, and I don't recall doing that, but I had probably a handful of men in 19 years that I had to do with it. Only one of them just took the response that I'm not going to hear, I'm not going to submit to the authority, I'm not that kind of thing.
Right.
So most people, first of all, sometimes they're just not aware. You have some people that are at varying levels of social graces, and they have no idea how they're coming across. Generally, a lot of the older guys don't realize how freaky that is to a 22 or 23-year-old female for them to be hanging around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't understand it. And you sit down and you explain it, and most of them, if they have any ability to be able to connect the dots, they'll get that. Mm-hmm. But eventually, you're going to have to sit down with them one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And
Frank, what do you do in a situation where someone can't connect the dots and they seem to be socially inept? And they're in your ministry.
Okay.
You know that God loves them. And how do you work? It's not that they're consciously rebelling as much as it is. They just aren't really aware.
No, that's a great question. And my first reaction is you make the connections for them eventually. Which means you do. In some cases, you have to ask them to do something very dramatic. But what I try to do is find things for them to do. Like things in the ministry on Sunday morning where they don't get anywhere near anything that's going on out there. You got them back in the back. Doing things that allow them to be interactive, part of things, like feel like a part of ministry, but to kind of help them not be in a position. And also, I like Dennis, and I've done this too, is I just assign people.
Mm-hmm.
John, it's your assignment.
And when you see him, and I talk about a man, would be a sign of John. When you see John is getting a little bit too friendly with this person or spending too much time with him, John goes over, intervenes, and says, "Hey, come with me right now." Guy goes over and says, "Come on, John, go with me right now. We need to fix the car." You know,
and talk about these in your leadership team. You can bring these issues to your leadership team. Don't try and solve it only yourself. Let them buy into helping you solve this. Make it a leadership awareness thing where you, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 other people understand this is singles ministry. This is what you're dealing with. And let them help you solve it. They will. We got a lot of hands here.
Question right here.
Just a follow-up on hers. Apart from introducing singles leadership in the church, have you found other ways to educate the church and even integrate singles into the life of the church where they see these things and become part of what you're doing, the church body, the married couples and the other people in the church, and maybe the majority of your particular church have seen successes?
Yes. One of several ideas, quickly. There's so many ideas. Take a single parent or a single person into a married class. Call the teacher of the married classes and say, "Could I come in next month for 5 minutes and interview someone?" We took several single parents into married classes, and I would just say, "This is Susie." I would get the date with the teacher. Come into the class. This is Susie. She's 32, has 2 children. "Susie, tell us some of your challenges. Tell us some of your problems." "Well, I struggle with finances. I struggle with discipline." And the married people listen to the single parent telling these problems. And then after 5 minutes of that, the married people start to get educated. Then you pass around a list, and we leave the class, and we leave the list with the teacher, and we say, "If you married people, if you would be willing to donate 1 hour a month, or 2 hours a month, to help Susie with some of these things, sign your name and phone number, we'll give you a call," and leave. You can do that. You can interview people in front of the whole congregation. Single men and women can be interviewed or can give a testimony in front of the congregation. Video, so many things you can do.
One quick answer to that. I think that one church I was in, the pastor actually allowed me to do this. I don't know in every situation you find that. But we actually did 60-second single slots in our worship services where we put together a video, and we would have some of our singles who were maybe more articulate and able to, you know, communicate effectively and that kind of thing. And they get up there and do a quick little testimony and talk about their gifted, you know, their areas of interest in the church. And, you know, it's really kind of a neat thing. We saw a lot of response come out of that. It broke down some of the barriers for people. Talking about what are some of the things I struggle with as a single person. It's not a whiner or something. It's just somebody that gets up and says, "Hey, you know, I want to be integrated in the church. Here's my gifts and talents. How do I get to you?" And we had people walking up and, you know, talking to me. So, I mean, there's some creative things you can do.
We have a question up here. Mrs. Lee.
We offer a lot of like the dating and trying to educate, but recently we have had like 3 or 4, not 3, marriages that have been break like 2 weeks
Oh, God.
Any advice or feedback? And I mean, I've been calling the families and things like that, so any advice?
You know, that, and I just appreciate bringing this up because this is something that came up in one of the, I think when you were talking earlier, that I still wanted to talk about just a little bit. Years ago, I'm not even sure I believed in premarital counseling, okay, quite honestly, you know, when I first got into singles ministry. But over the years, I've seen, you know, just the trends lately. But something I've become more and more convinced of is that you not only need premarital counseling, but pre-engagement. Before you ask somebody to marry, before you give them a ring, before you accept a ring, any of those kind of combinations, is to go through premarital counseling. Now, specifically to people that aren't going to pay any attention to you, I will tell you this. As a pastor, I will not do your sermon if I do not feel comfortable about the circumstances involved in it. And somebody coming to me a month out, I've been asked numerous times to do weddings 2 or 3 weeks a month. You know, for whatever reason, sometimes it's not even people in my ministry, just people that need a pastor, you know, and I can't do it because I've got to stand before God someday.
They will.
I don't know that you
they
can
will.
Stop that, okay, no. But what we don't want to do is enable it without, you know, proper counseling and things like with that. And there's usually a reason they're rushing. Okay, and they're usually not good reasons most of the time. All right? And so...
Is it or is it not wise to separate the age groups and the genders and then bring them together on activity nights? And during the separation times, educate the different ages on what pertains to them. Say, for instance, an older man that would be attracted to a younger lady and explain to him, you know, or to that age, how it would affect her, a 40-year-old man trying to talk to a 23-year-old young lady, how it would affect her, and educate them that way. And then when they come together as a group for activity night, they all come together in this ministry without all these different scenarios happening, and in each group everyone is receiving what they need on their own level. Is that right or is it not?
I think occasionally, I think occasionally separating the genders, males and females, for certain types of teaching and discussion is healthy. But there's also health in letting them come together and talk, because men want to learn, hear what women say, and women want to hear what men say. And they can learn from each other. So for certain teaching and discussions, yes. For instance, on the sexuality video, the six sessions, on the teaching on masturbation, we do a 45-minute teaching on all about this topic of masturbation. And then we separate them to talk individually, males and females. Because that's an issue that is so sensitive that men and women will not say some things in front of the opposite sex. So yeah, I think that's healthy. As far as the ages, occasionally, but I wouldn't do that very often. I would address that to the whole group. Because see, in most groups you're not going to have many 20-year-olds and 40-year-olds in the same group. In much of the time, especially the bigger churches. Or if you're a small church and you're just starting, you need to target an age group and make it clear. In my opinion, you just say, this is a young adult group, we're targeting the 20s and up to mid-30s. That's our target. And then the 40-year-old comes to you and says, well, what about me? And you say, you know, that's a great question. We're praying about this. We don't have a leader for it yet. We don't have enough people. Help me pray about this. But right now, we're trying to target the 20s and early 30s. Because the 40s will chase the 20s away without even knowing it, because the 20s don't want to hang out with people their parents' age. They have different abilities, different interests. The 22-year-old wants to go rock climbing and water skiing, and some people aren't physically able or desirous of doing that. So the 40s and 50s don't necessarily want to go do that. So I wouldn't, the 22-year-old comes into the room and sees 45-year-olds and says, this is my parents' age, I'm getting out of here. They don't stay. So I wouldn't set. I would have two separate groups.
And just to tag with that a little bit. First of all, this guy's in the back row back there.
Yeah.
Nathan.
Yeah.
A handful of us in this room.
Yeah.
I can play the best event in the history of the world, but if I don't have it somehow broken out where it's either specifically for you and your age group,
yeah.
You're not coming. You just ain't gonna show. Okay. That's all there is to it. And with that, so we've got to be wise and see that. They're helping us and understanding that God loves us all. We need to learn how to interact with each other. There's a lot that younger people can learn from people that are a little older. There's things that I can still learn as a soon-to-be 50-year-old guy or some of you guys that are in your 20s back there, you know. But the reality is we have to deal with it and treat with that. And so we don't want to just get lost in the scope of that.
And it's the same for married people. If you're here and you're married, you're not going to hang out with someone 20 years older than you on a weekly basis. You might know them, but they're in a different life stage of you. If you're 30 and married, you're not going to hang out with a 50-year-old married person because their life stage and interests are different than yours. We're all age conscious, and there's a reason for that, because of life circumstances.
You want to be careful with the double standard on that, and this is kind of a trick thing. I was fortunate enough in Columbia, South Carolina. We saw a tremendous growth in ministry there. And it doubled in 4 years. And most of that growth was in folks under the age of 30. All right. But what happened was when we got to this age question thing, because in general, what we have said to you is true. We don't want 40-year-old people hanging out with us.
And we had 20-year-old.
But we had one guy in our ministry there who was 38 years old. He was 6'6". He had beautiful curly hair. He was a really nice looking guy. He was one of the top surgeons in the state of South Carolina. Mm. Highly successful guy in every imaginative way that the world would look at it. A godly man.
Mm.
And what they did was they set a double standard in the group, because you see the young girls suddenly they wanted this 38-year-old guy that has a certain look about him, drives a Lexus, and put all that on for him.
Mm-hmm.
But then they didn't want old guys like
me. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so we had to be very careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you decide whatever that line is, and that border, that question of where do you separate for age groups if you're going to do things, you got to pretty much be willing to live through it. Now, I build flexibility in mind. I'll give a 2 or 3 year overlap in there, so that don't force a guy to have to, or a person to have to leave immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go ahead and get on the training thing. It's coming. Okay, you got a little period in here, and you want to go ahead and move now, that'd be good. But you can float a little longer if you need to. But at some point, you've got to enforce it. Because if you don't, it's what will do everything that I said. It'll kill your ministry without you even knowing it's killing.
And not that you can't put two healthy groups together occasionally. A younger group of 20s and 30s and an older group of 40s and 50s occasionally, but not every week. In my, I tried it, several churches, and we started losing the younger people. But if you have two healthy groups, let's say you have enough younger people in their 20s and 30s, you have 30, 40 of them, and you have enough 40s and 50s, you have 30, 40 of them, maybe once every 2-3 months you could put them together for a certain night of teaching or drama or something. But I wouldn't every week, because they have different issues and different circumstances at different lifetime periods, and you can teach and discuss from their life age. Okay, we have some more here and there. And if you're a small church, you have to choose one age group to start with. You can't do it all.
We call it celebration Sundays, by the way. You do it once a quarter.
Yeah.
You bring all your age groups together.
Yeah.
You have somebody like Dennis Frank or one of these guys
on
the weekend come in and speak. You don't have them either. The guy that's your record pastor do it.
Yeah.
We bring somebody, make it special.
Right.
We have strawberries instead of donuts. So.
We have Sandy.
Yeah.
I was
just going to ask, what would you do if you had younger people that wanted to come to the old? In their
20s
that wanted to come to the
end of 30 group. Really connected, really well. And they kind of like
we've had that. Have you had that?
To their age groups too. I've never seen that.
Okay. Do you have a younger group going too?
Yes.
Well, we do, but it's not. They do a lot of sports things, and they're not fully up and running yet. But we have a 20-something, a couple 20-something people that want to come to.
Do you know their motivation or reason for wanting to come?
And also, if they really feel accepted in our group, the 20-some group, there's more activity. They're a little more cliquish. And Sandy and I have become a part of this older group, and we're just tearing the walls down of cliquishness and asking God to just bring people. They want social acceptance. There's a really, and they're small people.
Would you encourage them to?
We don't encourage them away. We just say, hey,
There's some several issues there I can think of. Number one, I ask you the motivation, because if they're leaving, they don't want to go to the younger group because they feel it's cliquish and they're not accepted, they don't fit, then there's a problem in the group, possibly. And there could be a problem with them. They are not willing to help break down the clique. They are a little fearful, and they could be running to the older group because it's safe and because they're accepted, and they're neglecting the challenge of fitting into the younger group and the ability to make themselves accepted and to help tear down that. See, that could be an issue in that younger group. Now, if you didn't have a younger group going, and they want to come to the older, usually 90% of the older ones like it. Oh, there's youth, there's enthusiasm. Yeah, we want to see these younger people. And usually it's not a problem. So they usually can be healthy. But sometimes those older people will even say, a few of them will have the attitude, I've already raised my kids. What are they doing in here? I don't want them. We used to have potlucks for the older people, and the older people would complain about the younger people coming because the younger people would only bring a loaf of bread or a 2-liter of Coke, but the older people would make the casseroles and beans and all this stuff and spend all their time and see these younger people coming in eating all that good food, and all they bring is a loaf of bread or a bag of chips. So they get upset, because that's how it is. So I would, if you have both groups going, I would say usually I'd want to try and keep the younger ones with the younger ones and challenge those people. Sandy and Lee, because those people leaving the group, they have something to offer that younger group that is missing when they're not there. They can learn from them, and the people can learn from them. And I would challenge them. I'm not saying kick them out for sure, but I would probe the reasons.
And in cases where I've done that, I think you do at some point do an interview and find out what's going on. And if something, if there's a dynamic problem in the group that they're trying to get out of, that's your responsibility as the pastoral leader to get that straightened out. If it's just they're a little more mature than maybe some of the other folks for whatever reasons, you know, that kind of thing. My rule of thumb is always this thing. If you want to move up, we can talk about it. If you want to move down, the answer is no. There is no discussion. Okay? And I will talk about that in leadership meetings. I'll talk about that as a group as a whole. Because as a younger person, I'm making a choice at that point that I am very clearly moving in a direction that I know has some of the perceived things that, you know, that are created by that. And I'm making that choice to do that. And if it's a valid reason, not just running from a problem down there in the lower of the younger group or something, that's a consideration we can talk about. But there is no good motivation usually for a guy older wanting to get down.
Yeah. See, the group is more important than the individual.
That's right.
You've got to put the group's health and wholeness above the group, the individual health and wholeness. The reason that I want to move to this group. See? In other words, we're not being mean. We're not trying to say we're being mean and hard-nosed by saying we don't want you moving down. We're not trying to be mean or cruel. We're trying to keep the health of the group and the image of that younger group what it should be. Those 22-year-olds, 26-year-olds don't want to hang out with the 46-year-olds. And it's going to hurt the group if you get too many of them in there. So I agree with what he said. I like that.
What other questions do we have?
Yeah. Kevin. Yeah.
When you get back, Bill's got one here from Nebraska. We don't want to miss this because...
Because you picked on him and you...
I've been picking on him, so I want him to have his chance.
If you guys would just, from your experience and perspective and all that you have seen, and I know this is a broad-based question, but take us from 18, graduating high school, all the way through to 65. I know that this encompasses technically young adult ministry and single adult ministry, maybe various groups of single adults. But walk us through, and I know there's probably no right answer, I know there's some overlap here, but give us a general guideline of some age groups that you guys have seen. That works.
Why don't you start?
Yeah, I'll take a shot at that first. And let me qualify my answer by saying that I don't know this would work in every church. I've just been around long enough that I can sometimes get away with these kind of things. But, you know, I don't necessarily encourage you to go to your senior pastor meeting and say this is where you want it to be. But one of the things is I have always wanted to have the overall overseeing of 18 to 65 or whatever it is. Now, that doesn't mean that there could be another pastor, you know, that reports to me, that it might be the young adult pastor or whatever. There's a certain amount of consistency about having a common vision to work from. There was a vision that God laid on my heart a few years ago that is my vision for ministry. And with that, whether you're 18 or whether you're 65, that vision is important for you to understand. Now, it develops in different ways at various stages of your life. Okay, does that make sense? So you're starting at 18, and none of us know how long you're going to be in a single adult ministry. See, that's the big kicker for everybody that's single in a ministry. That's why some people struggle with it, because it's kind of the dark pit. We go in and we just don't know. We might be there for a year or two, we might be there for the rest of our lives. And so I want to teach them, starting at the very beginning, to whatever stage they may end up in, with a common vision, the common things that are running through that. So with that, now, as far as specific age breaks, there are different ways of doing this, obviously, and I'm mostly a Baptist church where we have things age break, and I, you know, personally hate that. On the other side, there really aren't a lot of other good options to figure out when you start trying to put it together to figure out. But somewhere in there, depending on whether you break out college as a separate ministry or not, whether that's considered to be part of your single adult, obviously your college probably, you know, like 18 or 22 or something like that. Then you have a young adult or a young career or whatever you can probably call it. And that starts, I started at 21, go to college or, you know, whatever, go to your school or something like 21 to 29. Okay. Now, depending on how large it grows, it could be that you need to break that again at some point. And then it might be 21 to 25 to 26. And then it might be 25 to 29. I also build overlap wherever I make this thing. So it'll be about a 2-year overlap in there. So that the person just feels like they can't go to the school. Let them go on up there if they want to. And if there's some people that are kind of lagging back from whatever their motivations are, let them stay back for a year or two, but eventually kind of move through the process. And then the next group would be starting at like 28 to about 35. And the 28 is for a couple year overlap in there. So the person that maybe wants to move up sooner than that, without wanting to think about it, when the one wants to lag back for a while, they will want to do that. But then you do the same thing again somewhere in there, maybe 4 to like 45, or, you know, whatever. Once you get past 35, the age breaks are less and less, I think, important because lifestyle and things, at that point, you're pretty established in your career. Some of them are through the door, some are single parents. There's a lot of similarities in life at that point. Underneath 35 and under, you know, people are still trying to figure out their identity and what they're doing. But does that kind of
push down? And I would just add that for 95% of you, you're probably going to be years and years if you ever get in a great big church, mega church like Freddie's talking about, where you have all those groups. You're probably only going to have 2 or 3 age groups. That's why I only put 2 or 3 on here. Well, I put 4, but 2, young adult groups, college group first of all, 18, 24, 5, then young adults, 20s and 30s, or some churches even go 18 to 35, which is a big spread. And then for the single adult, if you have the young adult groups, 20s and early 30s, then I'd go 35 plus or 30 plus. And very rarely would I go personally 55 plus. If you have a mega church, then yeah, you could have an older single group 55 plus. I like what he said, but you got to have enough adults to do that, and most of us in this room don't. I'm pretty sure. Does anybody? Many of you have that many? So I would just go 2 or 3 age groups. And then the need groups are these single parents and widowed and divorce care.
One thing I found with the 55 and older, though, that is, I mean, you have some 55s, like you said, kind of rock climbing.
Right.
And, I mean, that's what we have now, and it's just not working. So, I mean, I'm probably going to divide that again.
Oh.
It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the younger 50s and even 60s are totally bored with what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, there can be a big disconnect if you have an older singles population that's significantly older than 55, and then you have what I call young hearts in their younger 50s who sort of resent the association with those who are looking for Medicare.
Yeah, watch it.
If you're in a small church environment too, you may want to take like 10 year increments, okay? 20s, 30s, you know, something like that, or 30s and 40s, or combine them that way, or 40s and 50s, and have a much broader range, but also give a little bit of break in there so that, especially your younger group, because your younger group probably will not grow very much as long as it's combined, and especially if it's combined with a pretty significant age range.
So, yeah.
And the sooner you can get it to break out, you know, when you start to see you've got a consistent group, a core group, 15 or so, that you can build off of.
And use the word add a group. Don't say the word divide. That's a mistake I made. We're going to divide the group now because we have enough. We're going to add another group. Divide is a negative word. Right, she had a question back there too. She just didn't see it, but she'd been holding her hand up for quite a while.
Okay.
Let's get to her. And then I see the clock. It's 4:15, so we're going to end soon. Let's get a couple more and then we'll...
Does the same concept hold true that if you have the 30 and 40 year old group, but you have people coming that are over, like, way, let's say, 55 and plus coming, do the older ones generally run off like the younger 30s? And also, if that is true, how do you handle that when you do have people who are coming who are older, but yet you don't have a singles group for that age group of 55 and plus?
So, but you do have an age group for that, you said?
No.
You don't, okay.
So what you do if they're all in front of you, they're enjoying it. But I was just wondering if the same premise holds true that for the older age, the 30s and 40s, the older ones above that age, when they tend to run off the younger ones.
I think it's less of a problem the older you get. the older we become, grow, the more tolerant we are of other ages, so that a 35-year-old will mix with a 55-year-old a little more easily and quicker than a 20-year-old will mix with a 40-year-old, who is exactly, again, 20 years difference, 20 to 40, 35, 55. So I think because the older we get, the more chance there is of being single again, divorced or widowed. Although I know that's somewhat changing because we're postponing marriage, and like I said, there are more older 30s and 40s who have never married, but still, the older we are, the more chance there are being divorced. So I think it's not as big of a problem in the older ages, but it could be a problem with a 55-year-old looking at the 37-year-old woman or man. Yes, that could, but not as big as in the younger groups.
Okay, I think we have one more question here. For the smaller churches, what kind of business models, or not business, but models that you can come up with as far as networking with other churches? And so that way it breathes, it's a better breather as far as being and connecting with other, like, age or need group.
Well, that sounds like an automated question that's really easy to answer and to do. And unfortunately, it's not as easy as it sounds. Now, philosophically, as a singles pastor, I've been fortunate enough to be in mega churches and mega ministries for really almost all of my 19 years. Part of that's almost all of that's God's grace, quite honestly, okay? But I've always had the philosophy that if you were in a smaller church, I'm not after your people. Okay, God is, you know, so I've always tried to connect with people, you know, in smaller churches to make you aware of things we're doing, things that you probably couldn't afford possibly to do, but you can invite your people to come be a part of it and not have to have any fear of anything about what that my motivation is behind that. That's why it's called kingdom building. Okay? And there's two things. We need to build the church, yes, because as I said earlier today, we all need to be part of some kind of local church body. Okay? But at the same time, there are things that are just about kingdom. Now the problem is, depending on your senior pastor and what his philosophy of all that is, that's where you get into challenges. I have not had smooth sailing in this idea of metro type ministries. All the time. I left the church because there was no vision for us to the kingdom and other things. Yes, we built the largest single ministry of this kind, but there was no vision to see beyond that, and that was something God had laid on my heart years before. Now, I'm not saying that church is wrong. I'm not saying that pastor is wrong. I'm just saying it was clear for me then I needed to do something different with that. And so, so I think there again, it's going to depend on the singles pastors where they have activities and things, but it's also going to depend on senior pastors and what the philosophy is behind all that. And that's hard because nobody knows the heart but them and God. And we all know that we are, whether we like it or not, we are somewhat competitive people and there's challenges in that.
And small churches can bond together. It'll take someone who has a passion to go visit a couple other small churches. Evangelical. Doctrine shouldn't be an issue, but it is an issue. You have to relieve the pastor's mind about that and say, we're not teaching doctrine, pastors. So you can go to two or three other churches in your town, small churches, and look for a passionate man or woman to help you come together to start a weekly ministry in a small town. What's wrong with small churches coming together? Together to sponsor a ministry and meeting in a neutral location. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in some classes tomorrow.
Thank you guys so much, Dennis Ray, for your wisdom. This has been great. I hope it's been instructional for you and encouraging and uplifting.
Yeah, good answer.
Of course, we're not done. This night at 7 p.m., we will be getting back together for a time of worship. I know Freddie's going to be speaking again. So we're going to be dismissed in just a second. Let me also remind you, is there anyone in here who will be riding the van shuttle back over to the hotel? Okay. We'll leave in the next probably 7 minutes or so. So you just make a note of that. And let's go ahead and just pray and be dismissed from our meeting this afternoon. Lord, again, we do thank you for this time, and wow, it's been an incredible experience to hear the wisdom of really years of experience that both Dennis and Freddie have encountered and have shared today. And I pray again that we'll take this information as we look respectively at our unique situations in ministry and make modifications where those need to be made.
and but above all things, that we really seek to be obedient to you in the hope of furthering your kingdom. Bless us now and keep us safe as we go our respective ways, and bring us back in just a couple of hours for a time of worship. And we pray this in your name. Amen.